Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, how's it going? This is Oren. I am unfortunately in the Middle East right now, so I am not able to be on this episode, but there's been 378 episodes of Just Shoot It. I haven't missed one single episode, which is more than Matt can say, and I really didn't want him to be able to think that we're even by him missing one episode and me missing one episode. So I just wanted to get my voice on this episode. I hope you all really enjoy this conversation with Matt and Roxy. I myself can't wait to hear it. So here we go. Episode 379 of Just Shoot It. Take it away, Matt and Roxy.
Hey, welcome to the 379th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Matt Enlow, and this is Roxy Shee.
Woo! It's me. It's just me and Matt BB.
That's right. That's right. Oren is traveling the world, and so this is just a Roxy and Matt episode.
I am so honored. Wait, am I technically a co-host of this episode right now?
I mean, Oren has done, I think, two episodes without me. And this is my first without him. So
does it feel weird?
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. You know, it's fine. Like, I think I'm curious to see the way that the content is different. I think this will be a very, like, you know, touchy feely, like in your emotions sort of episode.
It's a vulnerability episode.
Sure, sure. And Oren would say he loves to be open. He loves to complain and vent and talk about the struggles. I'm putting on my Kaplan hat to just try and find some like tangible, teachable moments in our conversation. Mm-hmm. So Roxy, you have you wrapped in a new feature that had all sorts of different challenges. And in talking about it before we started rolling, I realized, we haven't done a what to do when you're dealing with, I don't want to categorize your feature this way, but we've all been in that situation where you're dealing with a shit show. And like, how do you, what are the red flags? How do you work around them? How do you embrace them? What are the things that you can do to not just get through a shoot that's really challenging, but come through with a product that you're proud of and something that is as awesome as you'd hoped it was when you first signed on in the first place. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get to all of that. But first, I had a little catch up. Roxy. Mm-hmm. So as you know, well, the last time Roxy, you and I talked, it was our end of the year catch up episode. So I think that regular listeners will remember this feature was the one that you were talking about, basically. That's right. The one that you've just wrapped. So you've gone on this crazy adventure. I can't wait to dig in on it a little bit. We have to be a little vague here and there, but you and I both have been through the ringer plenty of times, so we'll have plenty of tangible examples. But before that, I had this funny experience that I thought would be interesting to talk about on the show.
What happened?
I am a new dad. My kid's a year and a half old, mm-hmm. and my wife is an actor. And so a handful of times now, the director, especially if we know them, has been like, hey, do you want to bring Nora to set and, mm-hmm. you know, be in a shot or two or a scene or two? My daughter is offer only. She's been in a couple things at this point, right? Mm-hmm. But so that means that I'm the set dad. My wife's been shooting for a while. She's a couple days deep on stuff. You know, she knows the whole crew or whatever.
God, you're a dadager. You're like a stage dadager.
I roll up midday. I come at lunch or whatever, and I've got the kid, and I got the stroller, and I got the bag, and I'm there. And it's genuinely so fun. It's really been great.
Yeah.
But you can't turn your filmmaker brain off. Mm. And so I've talked before about how I'm a terrible extra because like I'll pitch things.
And no, Matt.
I know. I don't do
you
it anymore.
You have to know your role.
I know. I'm literally biting my tongue. I remember once giving a blocking note to a friend.
Stop.
And she was like, it'll cut fine.
Oh my God, Matt.
I don't do it anymore. I've learned. But it really, you know, you still are like, oh, well, you know, why are you doing it that way? Or I would do it this way. Or like, maybe I can jump in and help or whatever. You know, like that's always racing in your head, right? Like Roxy, you visited other people's sets and you produced for a long time as well while you were still directing. How do you turn off those voices? What do you do?
Oh, I actually never experienced what you just described. Like,
oh, interesting.
I think because I first started as a producer, like I always knew that that wasn't my role. Sometimes, like I'm there to assist the creative, but I'm not there to determine the creative. So I didn't come right out of the bat being like, oh yeah, I'm a director and this is usually my strength. I'd just be like, okay, well you do you, and my role is this. So I'm very compartmentalized in
that
way.
I'll be in the PO. Just taking care of business. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm just going to go eat snacks. You do you, boo. You know, I never, ever think that way. I think it's also because I'm always just like, they know what they want and I trust that. But, you know, and they're making something completely different. Everyone's on their own journey. I think that's usually how I see it.
Yeah. And that's the smart, correct way to come into any situation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this most recent experience, I very quickly turned that part of myself off and just was like, what can I learn? Because what was interesting is that the director had a very, very, very different style than I do in terms of communication and crew management, kind of like the behind the scenes aspects of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would do a thing where I would call action very loudly so I knew everyone could hear that we were rolling or like things, you know, things like that. And, you know, there were times where I wasn't sure if we were rolling or not on this set. And it was kind of nice. And like, look, did a light get turned off because the crew was trying to get ahead of the shot while we were still using it? Yeah. And you know what we did?
What?
We turned it back on.
Yeah.
She said, oh, sorry, we're still using that. Wait a few minutes.
I love that. Like, you feel like an energetic shift, right? Like, I think you, I just know, oh my God, Matt, I've known you for so long. And just hearing you talk like this, I'm like, my friend, you're getting older. because you realize that you learn, like, I think we are at a place, because what you were describing earlier about like, oh yeah, maybe not knowing boundaries in terms of being on other people's sets is a very 20s thing, you know, like during your 20s thing, because you just want to just be able to, oh, maybe I could help by like, you know, just inserting myself in here. But as you get older, you're just like, oh, you're more of an observer. And even if you're the leader, even if you're the director or whatever, it's just like, I've been, and you've known me for a long time too. I used to be so chaotic.
Sure. And yeah, that's true. It's true.
I was so chaotic. And now I'm just like, you know, I just find power in being still and just observing and being calm. Like, there's power in that.
Yeah.
Totally. And like, you learned, you know what I'm saying? And you continue to absorb. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, we started this podcast partially because you don't get to talk to other directors, and therefore it's really hard to learn from each other. Right. And so being a set dad was like this kind of fun glimpse into something like just a radically different approach. It was cool. It was really cool. So
did Nora like being on set?
You know, yes. So far, yes. Like, the hours have been easy breezy. I know what I'm doing well enough to like, be able to read the cues or find my pals to be like, hey, she needs to go burn off a little energy. We'll be over here. Like, I can communicate with a crew well enough that it's like, I'm a team member for them, you know?
Yeah.
Like the set teacher, you know, I was just like, hey, I got it. You know, like, just make sure we don't go too long or whatever, that we don't accidentally mess up the hours or whatever, but like we'll be okay. And they were like, fine, great, awesome, thank you. So she likes it. We also, on this last shoot, my wife had recommended the makeup artist, who's an old dear friend. And so it was fun to like hang out with her. She has kids of her own who are much older now. So she was excited to be around Nora and also knows like how to, you know, entertain a child if, you know, people needed to be other places or whatever. So like we had like a nice core group of people that we could, you know, have fun with and depend on. It was cool. It was a special day.
Just like hearing you talk about this, I know you miss directing, but at the same time, there's a sweetness about what it is that you're experiencing now. Like if you were directing all the time, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like just be able to be that bigger perspective person, you know, being a showrunner, bringing your daughter to set, you know, being around your friends and catching up and stuff like that. Like there's a sweetness about it.
Yeah. No, it is special. I will tell you what though, boy, it did put that hunger back in me.
I was like,
mm-hmm. You know, because also like I was there 2 days and you get to know people. It was a young crew too, you know, but like they were like
getting older.
Yeah, sure. As I like to say, Roxy, we're getting older, but the crews stay the same age.
Oh my God. I know. Like on this recent shoot, like all the camera people were like, the camera department was all like 19-year-old, 20-year-olds. And what?
Yeah, they're like ready to go out after the shoot. They're hooking up. They're best friends. It's great. It's really great. But that energy is good to be around. Those are our people, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. They've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, a little bit of perspective, I guess maybe the takeaway for everyone listening at home is have a kid, let them get a little older, then, make sure that they're offered a handful of set roles where you're friends with the whole crew is really what I would recommend. No, but I think like the chance to observe another set is something worthwhile and like you should go for it if you have
the chance. Always. Yeah. It's always you take away something when you're actually the one observing. That's always how I feel.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Roxy, let's jump into it. But before we do that, patreon.com/justshootapod is a place where you can support the show a little bit. We got a couple new bills, so you know, we got some stuff coming up. Drop us a few bucks if you want to help us out. That would be greatly appreciated.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We're going to use your feature as kind of the structural element, but this is an opportunity for any war story and how we dealt with it. Let's start with the earliest red flags, right? Like when you were first in pre-production on this film, did you see anything that like...
Oh, yes. Yes. So I feel like, you know, so for those of you who are now listening or don't know much about me, I started off as a producer. So, you know, Matt and I first met in sort of that dynamic. He was a director. I was a producer. We were doing a brand deal. And I've done a lot of stuff. You know, I've done I don't know how many features I've done at this point, mostly in the low budget range. I've done, you know, lots of commercials. I've done music videos. I've done all of it.
To clarify, though, mostly in the low budget range, that's still a pretty big range. Like your first feature was six figures, right?
Right. Let's clarify what low budget means. Yeah.
But like now that's like the budget that you were working on now, for instance, I think every listener would be like, oh, yeah, that's a real budget.
But true.
But it's not.
This is definitely the biggest budget I've worked on.
Yeah.
As like, a feature film.
Yeah, this is millions of dollars, I think we can say safely without that. I'm not getting you in trouble if I say that.
No,
right?
No, you're fine. You're fine. It's you know, I was just saying.
It's not a studio feature.
But I could say it. It's like a $2 to $3 million movie, you know? Right. But the thing is, I think. The reason why I say low budget space is because when you think of low budget, you're just like, okay, you're getting your hands really dirty. You sort of have to wear multiple hats. And in that environment, you go through a lot of challenges, right? So in a sense, in a way that I like to like talk about my career, whatever it may be, I like to think of myself when I think of myself as a filmmaker as I've been through it. Like, I've done it, right?
But seen a version of all of these.
Exactly, right? It's like I've put in my 10,000, you know, hours, whatever. But I wasn't humbled until I worked on this movie. So, you know, sometimes when you say that, you're just like, I feel like I have enough ammo to fight through whatever obstacles come away because I've been through it, honey. You know what I'm saying? It's like, there's always something new to learn. So I would say the first red flags that came with this situation was we were still wondering if things were a go with this movie, because obviously, well, not obviously, but usually in films like this, or when you're doing a feature film, a lot of it depends on casting, right? So with this budget, even though it's lower, we aimed really high. And so, you know, we swung really hard.
You were looking for namey
people. And so a lot of the decisions on when this was to start hinged on that decision. So we didn't know if we were going to get our actor. And then, like, we were planning to shoot around the April, May area in Newfoundland. And then and then it was literally like, I think, 4.5 weeks out of production that was slated. And then all of a sudden they're
that's when you locked it. Right. Yeah. So let's unpack that a little bit, though, because that is crazy. If you're an accountant and you're like, I don't know if this business is going to hire me or not until 4 weeks out, and I have all of these expenditures and I have to hire all these people to do all of this work, you'd be like, that's crazy. As an independent filmmaker, that is crazy, but not unheard of.
Right.
Like, your budget being contingent on cast is very, very common, if not the norm, right? And people getting cast kind of last minute, also not that crazy sometimes thing, but your lead is who you're talking about here. So that's a bigger deal. And then also that oftentimes it's not like when you get greenlit, somebody's just like, here's a check for the entirety of your budget. Like, there's a cash flow to it, right? Like, you have a certain amount of money in escrow and that means you're good to go. But like, that money is going to continue to trickle in, so to speak, on a weekly or monthly basis or whatever the deal is, right? So none of that's totally crazy, but it sounds like there were things that are extenuating.
There were movies I've done with 2 weeks of prep, like, and I wasn't stressed about,
but you weren't worried about
this what particular made this movie. Okay, so there's a bunch of amount of X factors that we didn't know were going to happen. So first of all, we're talking about shooting in a different country, right? In a town that you've never been to, and you're going to be working with mostly local crew. And so, you know, my DP came with me. I hired, you know, my PD from Canada because of, like, you know, the tax rebate, all of that. But the thing is, there were so many things that were still unknown. Nothing was locked down 4 weeks before. So it's just a lot of
conversations. It's not the talent. No. It's the whole friggin' movie.
The whole freaking thing. And I think with my background as a producer, you have spider senses. And so you're just like, if this isn't in place first, like, and you're looking at the schedule, you're like, this is going to affect all of these other elements. There's no schedule, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, things are just so unknown. Like, at least you could have like a bones calendar or plan, but there was nothing. And I would talk to my producer and then he's like, we still don't know anything yet because they're still managing a couple of things. And granted, the production company was like finishing another movie, so their hands were busy with that. And at that point, you're just like, well, it's not like, you know, if you shoot in LA, like if you and me, we shot in LA, we'll be like, all right, well, I understand. It's okay. I know the resources here. I could at least have some conversations, get started, right?
And in the back of your head, you're like, okay, look, if all of these people end up falling out, I still have my homies I can call. Like my bench is deep. Yeah, exactly. Of people you can call. Yeah,
exactly. So there were a lot of things, you know. I think being in LA, it's like you have the cream of the crop. You could work with a non-union actor that's really, you know, top shelf, right? But like that, I'm like, it's a newly budding film industry. We don't have really a list of crew people we could really hire. It's more like a lot of these people are new. And so you're going in with a lot of them. You don't really know what the expectations are because they don't have a lot of experience, you know, amazing people, lovely people, but that's the reality. That's the nature of the game. And that is the choice, right? So you're venturing into unknown territory, quite literally. And with that sense, you have an intuition about these things, but you know, and then suddenly, you know, once they say, okay, he's in, it's like, okay, Roxy, we need to get you on a plane like tomorrow. Right. So you have no time to housekeep anything, then you're on a plane and with your producer and you're on your way. And then I had a visa.
There are fewer plants in your background, Roxy.
Yes.
My condolences.
Well, R.I.P. R.I.P. But like, you know, and now also it's like, you know, because it's a newer budding, like sort of a place for film, like Severance is now shooting there, you know, but they're trying to bring people more filming over there. So, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, usually when I shoot in Toronto, I would get asked about like my visa paperwork like weeks in advance. And this was done super last minute. So there were things that were just not aligning or coordinated.
Could it be? You know? There is that difference between like, we don't have our cast, but we're still just getting all of our ducks in a row versus we don't have our cast. So we don't even consider the ducks. Right. That's the difference. It sounds right. Like you could be like, all right, well, here's a schedule we can all work off of. Hopefully it works. It probably will have to change some things, but we're all pointed in this direction.
Right.
And then we have everybody on hold or whatever. And if they need to move the days around, you can. But if you don't have a schedule built, you don't have anything to move and you don't have anything to fix in the first place as one microcosm of what it sounds like this was.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, and as a director,
you're just waiting to start.
I was just waiting and I'm like, I don't know. So I don't have connect. I don't know what it's like. So you feel powerless in that sense, which just starts to make you feel a little bit uneasy. But anyways, we got there and Daphne, my amazing DP, who's freaking amazing, came literally a few days after. And then we started scouting these locations. And Newfoundland, y'all, Newfoundland is beautiful, okay? For those of you who don't know where it is, it's like where the Titanic submersible recently had their sitch. So anyways.
Do you have any other examples?
Yeah, it's also where the closest place where the Titanic sank in North America. I'm sorry, that's like the only.
That's all you got.
That's all I've got. Also, Newfoundland's famous for their cod. So, so if you want really good cod, you should go to St. John's in Newfoundland. But, you know, we basically had to scout all these locations. Like, we just had to put the pieces together. We realized the weather was a lot more temperamental than we were aware of. You go through four seasons in a day. It could be snowing for 10 minutes, then sunshine for 10 minutes, then fog, heavy fog. You know, like it was really the Bermuda Triangle of weather.
Boy. And not going too deep into what this film is about, but like, is it contemporary? Is it outdoor? Like, what are the things you're looking for when you're scouting?
The reason why we wanted to shoot here is because we wanted some of that weather. Like it was
a little atmosphere
attached to the creative of the story. And Newfoundland is gorgeous, y'all. Like literally one of the most beautiful places on the planet, but it's also very difficult. If you're thinking about someplace so beautiful, resources, access, transpo, like all of that is difficult for like a smaller film. So but we weren't aware of how crazy it is. Like my actors couldn't get into the town for 2 days. They were stuck in like a vortex of going from Toronto to Halifax back to Toronto and couldn't get in because of a massive fog storm for 2 days. So we had to push a day. It was insane. It was just like completely unpredictable. Like this island will allow you to come in when it decides to.
And it's your actors, so like their mood is really important.
Yes.
And so if you're just like stuck in the airport for 2 days and also you know now you're a day behind,
right?
That's a bad headspace.
Like literally they landed at like 11:30. It took them like an hour to get picked up from the airport and drive to their Airbnbs. So they probably got in at like 1 a.m. Then we started the first day of shooting the next day at 8 a.m.
Yikes. Yikes.
And we didn't have time to do a fitting. You know, we didn't have time to do a fitting. Yeah. Like they literally came to set and started shooting the movie.
Well, and some of that is like, you know, you're a fish in water. These actors, are they used to doing indie film? Are they kind of rough and tumble or are they looking for stuff a little bit more?
I will say this. I got so incredibly lucky with this cast. Like this movie is literally just two people and they just go through the most intense character journey that, that, you know, I think, like, beyond everything, despite the challenges, everybody knows the script is great.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Everybody's incredibly invested. And like the fact that it's like an indie movie, my two actors were all the way in. Like, I could not be more grateful and to have their trust. And it was really just such a beautiful project. Like, any time that I was blocking or that I said rolling through cut, like, that was my heaven. Like, that was heaven for me in those moments. And then, like, whatever logistical nightmares we had to deal with, like, that was what we had to deal with.
The solution is easy, Roxy. Just don't cut. Just don't cut and then you're good. Just let, I guess, let the
until the Coast Guard's like, until the Coast Guard's like, hey, you guys got to shut down because
you have to cut.
Yeah, you have to cut. Yeah.
Yeah. And not to bury the lead here, you are ultimately really, really happy with the end product. And there's the happy ending at the end of the storm. But so pre-production is rushed and delayed. What's the next thing that it, like, the next totem or the next flag in on this path?
So we were shooting at a historical site, but like we were shooting in terrain. So literally every day you had to take ATVs to set. And then we were dealing with like 0 degree weather. Like, the wind was needles on your face. And we were doing about 30 to 40 flights of stairs daily. Because we were hiking, like,
it was... let's unpack that, because I think you know, similarly, you remember I did like a Western
Townies.
Yes, that's right. You came to the Townies premiere.
I did. I will always support you, Matt and Lo.
That's incredible. Thank you, Roxy. So Townies, we shot basically in between LA and Vegas in July.
Oh my god.
And
no,
it was beautiful. You know,
really hot,
really, really hot. Everyone's in period costumes. So sometimes the project just needs you to get the heck out there and shoot. Right. And each terrain, each climate is going to have its own ways of dealing with it. And hopefully you have a few locals and a set medic and a handful of people there who, like, you know, it's not their first rodeo in this particular environment. Right. Like, we were really good about hydration, and we had areas where people could cool off, and we were really mindful of all of the signs of heat stroke and all of that, right? But we still have to shoot in the place. We still just got to do it, right? Would you have changed any of the locations, or was it worth it? And if it wasn't worth it, why? You know what I mean?
This is a really good question, Matt, because a part of me is saying it was worth it because we got to shoot some amazing landscapes and we were actually in the historical sites, and you lived and breathed the energy of like, you could, it translates like it's so worth it. But at the same time, knowing what I know now, I don't know if those obstacles were worth it in terms of dealing with Mother Nature, because like, you can't get insurance payout for that. Like, it's not a hurricane. It's not like some unpredicted disaster, right? Like, if you lose those days, because we called a few days and so that was just money gone
a little bit more. So you've got, how many days are on your schedule?
But I think we actually only shot 14.
So 18 days is quick. That's quick. That's a fast move. Like, that's indie movies, right? But like, whoo, hot diggity, right? Like, that's, are you doing fives or sixes?
We're doing fives. It's union, so it has to be fives.
Great.
Yeah.
3.5 weeks is what that breaks down to, right? And so there's no act of God, so you can't get to claim insurance money. So you're saying you're up there on this mountaintop or in this historic environment, and the rain just makes, is it that your scenes don't match anymore, or just that it's unsafe to shoot, or what? What's
like
the,
with those things, it's mostly the wind. So it's the, it's how strong the winds are. Like, you can't put, we didn't put any C stands outside. We weren't able to set anything outside the windows because it's just that dangerous. And when you're that close to the coast, you're dealing with like 30 to 80 mile per hour winds. You could feel the house shake. Like, that is the danger. My DP, she's like 100 pounds. Like, literally when we walked outside, she was going to get swept away. Like, that's the danger of it.
Yeah, it's not just uncomfortable. It's an actual risk.
It's an actual. Yeah. So like a lot of these different places that we scouted that were on the coast of the island, we had to, like, my producer, Neil Allman, who's amazing. He goes by himself and he's like, any single day, this wind could be different. Which location gives us like the least margin of error? Right. So we ended up picking that location, which is very smart. But I think my wild creative heart, and I'm so glad I have the support of my producers on this, is I'm like, whatever it is, we lean into it, because that's the nature of how the weather plays inside the movie. So if one take we have, you know, like lots of fog, then the next we don't, we have a lot of wind, whatever, let's lean into it. Like, I felt like it was very much, you know, you feel very present with that kind of energy. And I haven't felt that way ever. Which is something that I'm so grateful for. You know, we're not on a stage or anything. We're actually there. And that's a type of magic. And you can't have it all, you know? So you really got to pick and choose what your battles are. And that was a battle that we willingly chose when we thought about those locations.
And so the result is that the footage is incredible, but you lost 4 days.
Yeah,
you almost lost a full week. It's a lot. That's a pretty significant amount of time. So then how do you deal with that? How do you remedy the loss of those days?
You know, that's that term that says when things are bad, be strong. And when things are good, be soft. I think that's I'm totally saying it wrong, but I think it has to do with leadership, right? And I'm just so grateful to have my producer and my DP. And also my production designer, who is just absolutely incredible. And these people just came to the front lines with me every single day, because I was not strong the entire time. There were times when I wanted to cry, you know, and like that I physically and emotionally and spiritually felt very weak. And they just carried me. You know, they just carried me. Like, I didn't cast my lead actress until maybe 2 days before I started shooting. Right. And I remembered, like, when things just couldn't work out, like with some of the options. And Daphne would be like, Roxy, you'll get your Viggo. You know, if everyone's familiar with the Viggo Mortensen story with Lord of the Rings, who he was cast like after production started because he replaced Stuart Townsend. And she was right. You know, I got my Viggo. I got the most incredible actress for my movie. And it just goes to show that, like, this really is an energetic, collaborative art form where you just show up for each other. Right. Like, Neil's probably the best producer I've ever worked with. I've learned so much from him. And there was nothing that he wouldn't do. You know, he's been in this business for over 25 years. And you could just tell that in his heart of hearts, he's still a child wanting to accomplish. Like, you know, he's in his mid, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm like closer to your parents' age. And that like always freaks him out. But it's really about who you surround yourself with.
I love that.
Yeah.
Of course, like, choosing your team is part of the process that I think as younger filmmakers, you don't realize. And like, you think, oh, maybe you're DP or something like that.
But like,
all of it is important. All of it is essential. All of it is one of the best gifts. You know what I mean? To be able to find your people, find your collaborators, learn from them is wonderful. But so, outside of, you know, bringing along the team that you have been through the ringer with, the ones you can rely on, the ones that you know you can look to when you're not feeling your best, were there any tangible things you did to leave that door open for them, create the opportunity for them to rise to the occasion?
Oh my gosh, Matt. Listen, this is how I work as a director. I always just feel that, like, I am the one creating the space for others to like, everyone has their stamp on the movie. You know, you're the one basically encouraged, like, you're guiding the creative in a direction, but in terms of allowing people to show themselves in the best way possible, you must give them that space. And just saying for all everyone listening, like, I love my New Finland crew. Like, everybody was top notch as well. And I'm so grateful for my keys because they really pulled this movie through as well. I'm surrounded by great people. I was just saying that earlier for like the people that I've known for,
you know,
with a deeper relationship with. But
I'm asking is what specifically have you seen work in bringing that out of people? Are you explicitly telling them, hey, this is all our film, or like, what, how do you, because it's easy to be it's all our movie, right?
Thank you for clarifying that.
The proof is in the sauce, right? What do you do? What, so, how does Roxy make it clear that it's all our movie?
So the thing is, like, as your director, you're not only paying attention to what's happening on screen, you're also noticing like what's happening on set. So you're also, and being, doing a feature film, you get really close to people, right? And you, in prep, you get to understand what their strengths are, what their nuances are, right? And so in certain situations, for example, like the AC, you know, Joe, first AC, he's 20 years old, he's a baby, but my God, his eye is great. He's always super sharp. He just finds it. He finds really good moments. I'm like, hey, Joe, you know, like for this take, why don't you just explore like how it feels for you in a little bit, right? And like me and Daphne, my DP, we have a shorthand. Like, we don't shot list really together. Like, she does her own shot list. We don't really talk about like I just block and then she determines the shots. And then I just direct the performances with the shots. And maybe there's some input once in a while, but that's her floor after I'm done blocking. That's all her. Like, I don't micromanage that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, and you know, I realized that like the assistant production designer has a really good taste for certain vintage things. And I'm like, oh yeah, go wild with that. You know, like, I know you boo, like, you know, I've seen this, like, what you're like, what do you think about that? So it's like really asking for people's opinions and giving, really truly listening and just also getting to know them personally and letting them, because when people feel empowered, that's when people really commit to the work, right? So like I said earlier, it's like you and I are getting older and we're noticed, and it's more about me sitting and observing and speaking only when I really have something to say. Yeah, it's very specific. I think as a director, it's not just about your actors or the or your AD and your DP and your producer. No, it's beyond that. Right. And speaking up for others and just being mindful that you're guiding the whole circus.
I love that. And I think we share that that mentality. I think also the side effect of that is that when you don't love something, when your assistant production designer shows up with something vintage that's not right for whatever reason. Because you've built all this goodwill where they know that you're valuing them, when you aren't feeling something, it doesn't bother them nearly as much, right? It motivates them even more a little bit, and also reinstills the sense of leadership that they need. Brings to mind my favorite joke, maybe of all time. How many first-time directors does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Wait, what's the answer to that?
I don't know. What do you think? Right. So like, you don't want them to lose confidence in you. Right. So I think in my younger years, I think I was more prescriptive and more like, this is what I want. Right. And I think that eliminates your ability to collaborate with people. If they don't have the invitation to bring something to the table, they won't. Right. And then you lose out on that artist and that specialist and their whole knowledge base. And the project suffers and everyone has a worse time. So you have to leave that door open for them. But also, if you seem wishy-washy, then they'll lose confidence in you. So it is a fine line. But if you're honest in both circumstances, oh, I love this, and oh, this is close but not perfect, and oh, this isn't right, all of that helps. You level up, the film level up, and your collaborative relation level up.
I think it really needs to be a dialogue, right? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, your job is human relations. And It's what you said. For me, what I find always works for me, because I'm a narrative director, is I always speak from a character perspective. Mm. And I know these characters very well. So I go into the details of, like, this is the room that she grew up in, mm-hmm. you know, and then she's obsessed with these types of, you know, animals, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And like, she went through this, like, in this, like, they've read the script, you know what I'm saying? But like, to give them even more color, context, textures about who this person was, mm-hmm. you know, obsessed with the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. A creative key would be eating that shit up. Like, they'll mm-hmm. be like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that. I like that. I like that. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you, oh, I love that. Right. I hate this. Well, what can you do about it? Mm-hmm. Oh, we could do this. What do you think? Right. So it's really just, man, it's all just like a lesson in leadership. Right. And, just inviting people to your table so that they could be heard. And then you being the final yes or no.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I want to point something else out about you talking about coming at it from a character perspective, mm-hmm. because I think I learned this from script notes years ago. But like, when you're giving notes on a screenplay, talk about the screenplay. Don't talk about you wrote this wrong, or you've got it wrong, or this is wrong. Mm-hmm. The screenplay is the thing that you're addressing. It's not a personal attack, right?
Right.
And so, when you come at any notes from a character perspective, then it's not Roxy doesn't like this or Roxy does like this. It's, is this right for the character? Mm-hmm. And how can we get closer to sharing a vision for what that character is and believes? And that's something that you're the steward of, but not the end all be all, right? Like, if someone brings you, you know, a Scream poster from the 90s, and you're like, oh, that's not what I was thinking, but that's right.
Right.
You know, then the world gets to open up a little bit more. Whereas if it's just your taste, we've all dealt with people, boy, especially in commercials, where we're really about someone's taste.
Right.
I like this, you like that. Okay. So then I guess we just pick whoever's higher on the pecking order. That's what's right. Mm-hmm. Rather than coming at it from a character perspective of like, I don't think that they would buy this because they don't have the money to, or they have more money than this, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that.
And that's where I feel like a director. Yeah, but it's like you were talking about being prescriptive, right? And I feel like that's where you really need to know your shit, and you really mm-hmm. need to know your story, and you really need to know who these people are, because mm-hmm. that is what everyone seeks in a director, is mm-hmm. that voice and that perspective. But it's mm-hmm. like not being prescriptive about like, well, some are, you know, if it depends sure. on what director you are, you know, it's like, oh yeah, like this rock needs to be angled this certain way. Like mm-hmm. it has to be that. Like, absolutely. I respect that. But I feel that when a lot of creative people are working with a director, like they hunger for that. They mm-hmm. want, they mm-hmm. want that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, locations. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it was worth it.
It was.
Sounds like it was worth it. Sick. And look, and you know, like, to paraphrase another podcast, making movies is hard, right?
Yes.
So like, everyone kind of signs up for like, it's going to be like, there's a difference between hard and dangerous. And you had to make the call of like, oh, this is dangerous, we can't shoot.
Right.
Oh, this is hard. Oh, this is unpleasant. Oh, I'm sopping wet. Or, you know, I'm frustrated because I just put up a light and now we don't need it, or mm-hmm. whatever. Like, the shifts of the weather, that's just the gig, right?
Right.
So then the next, let's talk about that next big challenge.
Right.
After you've picked your locations, you're shooting. What, what's the, and this could be from any project, right?
Yeah. I just feel like, because I just came off of this movie, like all I can think about this movie, and clearly there was nothing like it in my entire career. But mm-hmm. for example, I was talking about weather shutting us down for like multiple days, right? So originally we had travel days, right? So mm-hmm. for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's like literally the whole company moves to another location, sets up, like you need a whole day for this stuff, like mm-hmm. base camp mm-hmm. generators, like, you know, making sure all the resources are figured out. You don't shoot on travel days. But you know, it's like we're all traveling together. It's like the circus is moving. Yeah. But like, because we lost those days, and you know, me and the producer, we were operating on the fear that like anytime, you know, they mm-hmm. could pull the plug on us, because at what point does losing all this unknown money becomes worth it, right? Mm-hmm. So then we still had to stay on schedule. I lost those days, but my rap day was still in the same place. Mm-hmm. It didn't push back. Mm-hmm. So my travel days became shoot days. Mm-hmm. Right. And then there were days when I'm like, I have to make up a day and a half of material to shoot in 12 hours with no overtime. And that was like a hard mandate.
Right.
And some of those situations were literally impossible. But like, you know, I would talk to my producer and I'll be like, listen, you know this. I know this. If we do not leave here with the essentials, mm-hmm. we're going to come back and spend more money to reshoot it.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So it's like literally having those conversations where you're fighting, you know, the not fighting, but like really arguing your point and like serving the artistic integrity of the movie and like what is best for the movie and being like, we're going to try our darndest, mm-hmm. but we all know the reality. Right. Right. So it's just, bizarre because, you know, sometimes those generators will stop working and like make hair and makeup trailer can't get power. And then you're supposed to shoot after lunch and then you can't shoot after lunch. And then suddenly we're there for another day anyways, and you got to book more hotels for everyone. So it's just wild. And sometimes those hotels don't have enough to have, like, this is Newfoundland. This is not New York or sure. LA sure, sure. or Atlanta even. And it's like, there are people three to a room with not enough beds. Like it's stuff like that, right? That because of all of these things that happened, you're like literally thinking on your feet.
Mm-hmm. And it's cumulative. All of this is stacking, right?
Yes, domino effect.
Like, okay, right. So I'm rushing scouting, and then so I'm really tired, and I probably didn't get enough sleep, and then it's been raining and I'm stressed about how I lost a few shoot days. And now the day that was kind of a recovery day, like that's the other thing about travel days. It's like, you're not loading the C-stands into the truck. Mm-hmm. So you're that's a day for you to like sleep in a little bit, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, talk to your cast, circle up with your, it's not like you're, it's a day off really, but like you're talking with your DP, you're talking with your AD, you're strategizing. How are the ways that we can do all of the different goals? How do we achieve all the goals of this film go moving forward?
Right.
That's why I don't love French hours.
Yeah.
You know, like when you roll through lunch, it's because we need those moments to just sit down with the team and really put our heads together and figure out how to move forward. And it's easy to be like, okay, well, we only have X number of days and we need more time. So we're not going to stop and talk because we need to shoot. Right. And then you never have the plan in order to get it done.
Exactly. You're yeah. just sort of like, yeah. just like, I don't know, terrorizing your nervous system. Mm-hmm. you're just mm-hmm. in fight or flight the entire movie. Like there was that one point, Matt, where, you know, Daphne and I were in a fugue state, and Neil was pacing outside because he had so much anxiety. But we were just like, this scene, one shot, one setup, mm-hmm, one take, sure. let's yeah, go. Yeah, we'll you know, just done. Like, just yeah, get yeah. it done. And then there yeah. were like C stands and Apple box because we were moving so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And Neil's like, we'll just comp it out and post. You know, like it was yeah, just yeah, so sure, hysterical. Exactly. It was so hysterical.
Can I talk about that scene in particular? Right. So yeah. you're saying, just to paint the picture a little bit more, you guys are at the end of your rope and you're just like, I imagine producers have been like, well, can you do it? Can you do it? Can you do it? And like in the back of your head, you're like, well, technically, yeah, if I didn't light it and the actors, we just did it as a one-er and we changed the location, technically I could get it in the can, but that wouldn't be good. Mm-hmm. And so slowly you sort of whittle away the will to like stand up for a scene or a beat or whatever. And you're like, okay, well, let's just get it in the can. And we've all been there. And you're mm-hmm. like, we'll fix it in post. We'll clean it up in post. We'll comp it out in post.
It's, but the thing is that of course it's like, you don't want that. Right. And
right.
I've always prided myself like in being fairly chill on set and like mm-hmm. having a very grounded, my phone is at base camp. I never mm-hmm. bring my phone. I'm never texting. I'm always just sitting at Village and thinking. Like that's what I pride myself on. But it was so yeah. fast. We didn't have time to process anything. I can't tell if it was good or not. I can't mm-hmm. tell if things were in focus or not because we just didn't have mm-hmm. time.
You're just going for it, right?
Yeah. yeah it's a nasty feeling. It's a nasty feeling.
Sure. It really is.
Yeah.
Did it work out?
Yes, because I have the most amazing editor. Hey! So I think it's just like, again, it's what you were saying earlier. It's like when we were younger, we didn't really understand how vital it is, the importance of having the right people around us. Mm-hmm. And like Don, he would check in with me every weekend and be like, you're doing great. You know, like just everything looks really good, you know, and just giving me some positive affirmations.
That's great. So the editor was assembling as you were shooting.
Right. Yes. Yeah, and then it was great. And he'll be like, hey, if you have time, can you get a pickup of this? Mm-hmm. I think it'll be good for this scene. And it's just so nice to have that, you know, just because you're just moving so fast and you're dealing with like daily things falling apart, you know, all the time, and you just have other people looking, you know, looking out for you, watching your back.
On the show, we talk about like just needing a shot of a hand on a doorknob, you know, mm-hmm. And how when you're in post, it's like, hey, go grab a camera and just pick it up, just get that shot and make mm-hmm. it match.
Yeah,
like which we did on See You Next Christmas. My hands are the main actor's hands. A few shots. And it's great. You can't tell the difference, and it's better than like trying to make it work, blah blah blah. But if your editor is cutting as you're going, you can do that with the actual actor and like mm-hmm. look, maybe it's not the right doorknob, but like you can steal it kind of during lunch or whatever. You can conspire and have a little splinter unit make that stuff happen and make it even better than if it was just, you know, in the garage or whatever.
Yeah, and it's so great because like he would be, you know, emailing or texting my producer, and then because my head is so in whatever we have to shoot, they'll be like, "Oh, hey, Rox, here's some downtime. Why don't we just grab mm-hmm. that real quick?" You know?
Yeah.
And I'll be exactly. like, "Oh yeah, great. Yeah, we have time. Let's go do it." So it's just so nice. I feel like with this, it's like to be supported by the right people because mm-hmm. I'm an emotional person. I'm a director, mm-hmm. y'all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I can't always be the leader that I see myself as. Like, it's just not reality.
Well, and also we are half logistics and half artistic.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And they affect one another. So the vulnerability that we're expecting from our actors, you have to expect from yourself as well, but also in the back of your head, be like, okay, well, if I cut that shot, then we'll still make lunch and that'll put us back on schedule. You know, like the calculus of it all as you're checking
in. It's a hard job. On our last day, this is probably the hardest thing of all because this was totally unexpected. You know, the day before we were shooting on the Atlantic Ocean, you know, I had to step off because I was getting sick from the waves, but we did like a giant storm rig.
Mm-hmm. And are you, when you say on the Atlantic Ocean, are you in the water
yeah we were in the water. I had to step off because I got so sick, but
I would definitely
never do a sailing movie.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it was definitely an experience that I know myself I will never do that again. But like we did like a giant storm, you know, out on the ocean. It was really cool, you know, and we had a really hard day, but you know, the next day was our last day and all of us were just like, oh my God, we made it, guys. Like, good job, team. Like, everybody, great job. We made it through. It's going to be a great film. And then, you know, we had a crew member pass away, like, on the last day of shooting. Yeah. And this is not something I wish upon anybody to experience because it was just so terrible.
Just to be clear to everyone listening at home, separate from this was not a set accident or something like a separate occurrence.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But you know, he was with us the day before, and mm-hmm. It just so happened that we found out in the middle of our shooting that he passed away. And you know, the crew is all locals, you know, it's a very small community, and everybody was grieving very hard that day. And as for me, that was probably the most challenging thing I had to do because it's like we couldn't call another day because mm-hmm. there was no more money left and
people are flying home tomorrow.
Literally tomorrow. Yeah. And but it's like how to navigate, you know, of course, letting everyone go that like needed to grieve or didn't feel comfortable being on set anymore. But it's like, how do we get through the rest of the day? Mm-hmm. Right. By being with empathy, but also like six scenes is a lot, like, but also getting through them effectively so that people could go home to grieve. Right. Yeah. I think that was probably the hardest day, like outside of all the challenges that I talked about, like dealing with something that catastrophic emotionally,
it doesn't get much harder.
Get much harder than that.
Yeah. I mean, truly terrible. So two questions come to mind, or two issues.
Mm-hmm.
What your philosophy is, what your take is, how do you lead a team through that, right? With as much compassion as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the other side of the coin of like, how do you deal with it, right? Because I remember, this is not an apples to apples comparison, but I remember I directed a campaign for College Humor. So a bunch of good friends, the day after Trump got elected.
Oh my gosh.
And it was really hard. It was really, really hard. And I remember I would come after a take, I'd go back over to Video Village and I'd be like, "Hey everyone, how do we feel about this?" And, they'd all be like literally like wiping away tears. Do you know what I mean? Or like, just again, not the same, but still like a collective trauma onset for, at least some of the people there. And I remember one of my friends being like, "How are you doing this?" And I was like, I don't remember what my answer was at the time, but I just repressed it all. Like I just shut off that part of my heart and brain and soul. And then the next day it hit me. And that is not a healthy way to live. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and it was only one day. So like a kind of a different deal. And I don't know what I would do faced with that again, like how I would cope in a healthier way or manner. But so I'm curious, Roxy, on both sides, like how did you process as an introspective and sensitive person? What do you do? And then how do you lead your team?
I felt like, Matt, what you did was the right thing to do, though. You know, like I felt like you had to. It's like when everything, it's that same philosophy that I'm totally saying wrong. It's like when things are things are difficult, you got to be strong. Right. And then like when things are good, be soft or something like that. But it's like you had to be the one to carry through shooting.
You're like, I'm disassociating. I'm not in my body. Here we go.
You kind of have to. Because you're the leader.
Yeah.
When you're the leader, you don't have that choice. But I think it's choosing how to lead in that moment, like being gentle with others while also carrying them through it. And also being the voice. Like, I think your voice is so important. Your energy is so important, you know? So it's like in that moment, it's like maybe my AD, I wouldn't rely on them in that moment. Like, all right, guys, you know, I know that it's a hard thing. You just speak up. Right. And then you just be like, we only have a few more things to get through. Just be very mindful, you know, and speak up if things are too hard for you, like we'll work around it. Let's get through this together. All right. And then, and just really being that strength that we could all just go home. Because I don't know how you felt, but it's like in that experience that you had with like Trump getting elected and like with our crew experiencing what we did, is in that moment I felt when I found out, first it was shock. Second was, none of this matters. I'm just making a movie.
Right.
Like literally this is just a movie. Right. And let me carry everyone so that we finish and we'll finish when we finish. Right. Like no mandate on overtime because we need time and those who need to leave can leave. Just really picking, like you have to be the one to pick up the extra weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just what it is. And then you can grieve after. Sure. It's not healthy, but it's what needs to happen. You're in that position. You're in that position, you know?
Let me ask something and we can cut it if you don't want to talk about it. But how was that information disseminated? How was the crew told? How did people find out? And what would you recommend on that front? And this could be for any hard, sensitive, bad news, right?
So this is what I would suggest, because this information was delivered to us quite immediately. Mm-hmm. And it was before lunch. We were told to stop shooting. And then this was what we were told. And mm-hmm. you know, that was just for
was
me.
Was it like, hey, everyone, circle up real quick? Or yeah. Yeah,
it was like, oh, everybody, we have something that we have to tell everybody right now. And then we go and send the actors to the trailers. But the actors wanted to know what was happening. They weren't going to go to their trailers because we're in the middle of like shooting a scene. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
So like everyone has a right to know. I think how I would have preferred for it to happen is for that information to be delivered at the appropriate time.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Right. So just when, if you're a producer, if you're a director, if you are aware of something, just to know that the timing of information really impacts what happens, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so like everybody was carrying this, and maybe they had reasons for giving us that information mm-hmm. very soon. Like maybe, I mean, there's something I don't know about. I want to give that.
Do you mean it's like relative to what you were shooting and when, or relative to the time of day? Or?
I would just say relative to the time of day.
Uh-huh.
Because, but then, you know, people are on their phones, right? But I don't know. People could get information, like people could start talking. I don't know. But I think in terms of focus and everyone's emotional capacity, and just maybe at lunch or something when people mm-hmm. have more time and space, you have an hour for lunch, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could talk about it, like maybe that. But it was really hard for it to be for us to be told that, you know, suddenly in the middle of shooting a scene, like barely 2 hours in.
Did you break for lunch then?
No.
After that?
Oh, we did break for lunch later because there was just. But we had to go back to shooting because we weren't even close to lunch yet.
Yeah.
And so it's that's what I would have preferred. But who knows? There could be things I wasn't aware of. Like, I don't know. Right.
Sure. So, boy, it is really tricky. My heart goes out to everyone. Mm-hmm. From a problem solving perspective, the point about the phones is right on. Right. Mm-hmm. So like you can't wait too long, but also. Like you can't be like deliver the news and then be like, okay, well, everyone back to work. We got to make our day. You know, like you do like the top of lunch is probably when you want it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Boy. Yeah. I mean, it's just terrible. No matter what.
The thing is there are no easy answers. Yeah. I think that's what I learned from this experience is that no matter how you chose to make decisions on what happened that day, every choice was hard.
Yeah.
There's no easy solutions for it. And that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
Very positive, happy, y'all. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's right. No. And again, you're very proud of the film.
Yes. Like, extremely.
It's going to turn out well. You know, there's positive feelings around it. So, mm-hmm. so before we go, I do want to talk a little bit about post. Right. Mm-hmm. Because all of the production decisions that we're talking about, those all had real ramifications. The weather of it all, the number mm-hmm. of takes you got, mm-hmm. shooting on those travel days, leaning into the idea of shooting, like enjoying the weather versus not, or rather mm-hmm. embracing the weather on a take by take basis. Mm-hmm. All of this. So any problems in post that we should be aware of?
Miraculously so far.
You nailed
I'm a
it.
Fucking genius. Okay. And I think first of all, I also want to add in a little tidbit of a suggestion. Like,
please.
I think, look, your friends are so important, y'all. Like, Daphne and I lived together during these 2 months. And I think when things are really hard, and she's so wonderful, she looks at me, she's like, you're a genius. She's like, everyone is so lucky to have us. If it wasn't for us, we would be, you know, and then That's I funny. Would repeat it back to her. I'm like, you're a genius, right? And it's just like constantly affirming because I think you need people around to like amp each other up like through hard shit, right? And then you have each other's back. So it's like just being very present in the moment. We both be like, oh, does this cut together? Does it not? Okay, we got it. And mm-hmm. just like, and then there are things that we weren't confident about, but then like my editor will be like, oh yeah, I don't see an issue with that. Like, there's definitely a way around it. And I think all of this comes to experience. So I am very experienced at this point, and I trust myself inherently. And I trust those around me just as much. So it's like, I don't know. There's, whenever I have that doubt, I just lean on my friends and just be like, do you see an issue with this or whatever? But the movie, I got my editor's cut 2 weeks after I came back from LA, and I was like, I'm not ready to see this. And then my partner, he very supportive. He like watched it with me. And then I was like, oh my God, like, I got it. Like, I got what we needed. And now it's just a matter of making choices. But I don't know. I just delivered my director's cut. Who knows how many issues the rest of Post will bring, because we all need to be cautiously optimistic. I feel always what it is.
But there is that sigh of relief of like, oh, it's going to work. You know, like when you're, when it's truly a challenging shoot and so many scenes are a blur, and like you made decisions in the moment that, you know, you stand by, but like you second guess or whatever. There's a, I remember having early on feelings of like, is this even going to cut together? Is it going to work at all? You know, and just knowing, yes, it's going to. I think it's half, have experience, and then having a collaborator, the editor, being able to confirm that for you. First starting out, I would do the thing where I'd like just build my scenes around cool shots, right? I'd put together, they'd be like this cool shot and that cool shot or whatever.
We all did.
Right, of course, of course. That's, I think like that's part of what part you of first it. Think of directing as, is like, okay, well, you get good performances and you get cool shots and then it'll all work. That's not terrible advice, but then, you know, that nips you, you kind of get in trouble a couple times. You realize, oh, this doesn't work the way I wanted it to. And then you learn about coverage. You start building in a safety net, right? And before you know it, when you're rushing, you're like, okay, and then this is really a comedy thing, but, you know, I'm sure it applies across the board. It's like, okay, well, when in doubt, master shot, two shot, close up, and I'm good. I know it will work. It will always work. And that's a pretty boring scene visually. And maybe the jokes are great and the performances are great, and like each of those shots on their own has compositional validity to it, but master two, close is just it's a basic recipe.
It also feels lazy.
It's a box cake for right?
Yeah, it feels lazy.
And so then you're like, okay, well, I can't do that anymore. That doesn't make any sense. I want to grow. I want to be better. I'm just playing it safe. And so you start throwing in those weird shots again. And then that creeping feeling of like, oh shoot, like, is this boring or did I get it? Kind of comes back. You know what I mean? Are there things that you do to make yourself feel confident in the way that you've shot out a scene?
To make myself feel confident? I feel like I just know it. I think it's, for me, it's like blocking turns me on. That's like my freaking most favorite thing about directing is just like getting to play with the dynamic emotional energy of the actors and whatever it is they're dealing with in that scene. Like that to me is everything.
But and then you said like in terms of shot list, you turn to your DP to kind of come up with that together with them. Is that. Are you, when you're blocking, are you thinking about pieces? Are you thinking about, okay, well, if I have them cross, it's going to add another setup. And so do I have the schedule for that? Or, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, there were some DPs I work with where I have to be more hands-on, but when I get to work with someone like Daphne, oh my gosh, I can just play. Like I could experiment with blocking and then she'll watch it and she'll be inspired by the way she wants to shoot it and what to capture emotionally when she watches the rehearsals. And then there'll be times when she's like, hey, Rox, like, okay, we don't have a lot of time. I'm like, okay, then let's simplify it a little bit and let's really make it about this moment. Like to me, like what you're describing saying is like when things are in a pressure cooker and mm-hmm. it doesn't work out the way that you originally blocked it, but it always becomes better because in that pressure cooker, you're really forced to be on top of your game and you're mm-hmm. really forced to find your focus. Mm-hmm. And like, mm-hmm. how Daphne sees things is always much more dynamic than how I see it in my head because mm-hmm. she's a cinematographer. I'm not. And I trust her. And like, my job is to make sure that whatever it is that I need to find, like, for example, like my two actors were arguing in the scene and this is one of their first scenes that they shot. We're still getting to know each other, you know, as creatives. And so they were acting out the scene and we rehearsed it. And I'm just like, it's just not right. Right. And I'm like, okay, like you need to give him something else, like to really provoke him. Like, let's try that. And if the energy is there, then all they have to do is capture it. Like
they being camera.
Has to capture that. And like, I'm just signing off on whether or not we get that moment in the way that it's supposed to, whether it's like in a move or whether it's static or like we sit like, and so I don't know. I think like, as I get older, I'm more and more confident in myself and those around me. I don't have anxiety as much about like, oh, like every day we're just like, oh, this happened. All right. Well, that's not my problem. Like quite literally, I feel like I know I'm healing when I don't see everything as my responsibility. And I feel that in the moment I can create because that's when I'm the most connected to my power. It's like a director. Right?
Yeah.
That sounds super woo woo, but whatever.
No. I was just thinking to myself, I'm glad Oren's not here for this.
Is he going? Wait, what? Because he's just going to. Why? Wait, what would
well,
he say? What
I
would
he be
say?
Like, yep. Moving on.
But you know what I'm saying. You know, it's like you understand that feeling.
And I'm teasing. Oren agrees as well. I think it's like how you, I think the approach is just different in terms of how we get there, you know, how one gets there. And like some people a little bit more anxious is to use your word. I think that's right. And then also just type A, the math of it can be a little tricky for people sometimes, right? Or the steps, the choreography you want to.
I think if you come from commercials, you come from animation, or you come from things that require that VFX, that require that specificity. Mm-hmm. And me, I'm all about being messy. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So it just comes from a different experience. And, you know, I don't know how I would do if I need something to be like super technical within 30 seconds. Like, I don't know if I'm good at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I'm not a technical person. I'm a messy performance driven director.
Artiste.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, Roxy, I love that. I can't wait to see the movie. I'm sure you'll be back on soon to tell us more about it.
Yeah.
And the 16 other movies you're going to shoot in between now and then.
Oh, stop. I just really want this strike to be over.
Boy, tell me about it. Tell me about it. Well, Roxy, do you have a few more minutes to hang out and endorse with us?
Yeah.
Unpaid endorsements.
So my unpaid endorsement is an Instagram account called Retro Sci-Fi Art.
Ooh.
No spaces, all one word, Retro Sci-Fi Art. If you're going to be on Instagram, why not get a little inspiration? And boy, it's great. It, you know, look, if it was 10 years ago, this would just be a Tumblr. You know what I mean? But here we are on Instagram and like they'll put together like a carousel of like a handful of images from a film or an anime or, you know, a photographer. And it always makes my feed inspiring and better.
OK, for me, if y'all haven't seen Past Lives yet, get your ass to the cinema if I can watch it. Matt, have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet. Oh but God. To be fair, I haven't seen a goddamn thing.
I know. It's okay.
I can't leave my house.
You.
I mean, I can during the day, but then the baby goes to sleep at 7, so it's hard to go to a movie. It hurts. You know, I'm religious, Roxy, and I haven't been to church in 2 years.
Oh my gosh, Matt. No, you have to
Tell us about Past Lives.
Oh my God. So Past Lives is a movie by Celine Song, and it is her first movie ever. So Past Lives is a movie starring Greta Lee and Tao Yu, and it's directed by Celine Song. And this movie, I can't even, it's like the perfect movie. Like there's no other way to describe it. The way it's written, the way it talks about your childhood love and one that holds on, and like, when is it time to move forward, and like all the what ifs that you could have played. Like, it's so romantic in that sense. And I think because I'm like an immigrant and I'm a third culture kid, like, and the story talks about like how she left Korea at 12 and then her 12-year-old love at that time, you know, just felt like it was a sudden goodbye and things were not really resolved. And you see them at 12 years old, you see them at 24. And then you see them at 36. So like these three points in their lives and they connect or reconnected. And it is sheer perfection and poetry. And the ending is...
No spoilers, Roxy. I'm going to see it.
Oh my gosh, Matt.
Yeah, I can't wait.
There's like a fucking lesson in screenwriting and directing. This is it. Like, what a perfect movie.
Do you know much about Celine Song?
She, I don't know anything about she her. Does theater. She, I think she works in theater. She's like a playwright, but
That's the relief. You can hear me.
Right.
You're like, wow. Every once in a while you hear of like a first time filmmaker who's never shot anything on film and they just come out of the gate. Perfect. Right.
I'm sorry. I didn't give that context, but I wish she's really cut her teeth, you know, in the storytelling. But it's just so inspiring. It's definitely not a movie that I feel like I think when you look at movies like this and at first you're just like, oh my gosh, like how do they get it so good? But at the same time, like when I'm watching, I was like, oh, this is totally never a movie I would make, but I appreciate you know, like how perfect it is of a film. And you just feel fueled by that there's a story within you somewhere that is willing to be as vulnerable and as, you know, you're willing to dive that deep. Like, I've never cried so hard. Like, I cried so hard, Matt, that I felt drunk, that I felt completely, like, I was so dehydrated that I felt drunk like that. If y'all have watched Past Lives, hit me up, y'all. Like, text, like, DM me, all right? And let's talk about it. Like, what a fucking piece of art.
Thank you so much, Roxy. Super fun.
Oh, my God.
Where can people keep track of all your goings on?
You can find me on Instagram, the millennial platform for all millennials, at Roxy She. It's just my name. You can DM me. I probably won't respond for a long time because I don't know how to use it. But when I do, I promise I may or may not say anything, but I send you love for hitting me up. And then I think that's it. Like, I'm kind of lame nowadays. Like, I just
live your life.
Thank you.
You're busy making movies and touching grass. Right? That's the move.
Touching grass. Yeah.
You can follow. If you have questions for the show, if you want us to put you in touch with Roxy, you can tweet at us or DM us or all of that stuff at Just Shoot It Pod across all social media. And you can follow me at Mr. Matt Enlow. I'm across all social media there. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. Produced by Tyler Small. You're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.